I'm just suggesting anyone, if you want to come closer, feel free. So I have a funny name for this talk came. The rich betwixt and the clean between.
Again?
The rich betwixt and the clean between. So in English we say betwixt and between, or they used to say so, just to mean in between. And I want to talk about spending time in the in-between. Sometimes letting it be a third thing in between black and white. And sometimes experiencing how it's not a thing. Being along the river here, and knowing that just a few years ago the elephants used to come across and tear down the wall on that side of the ashram. So they would build the wall, and then every year the elephants would come and tear it down. And so they haven't quite gotten around to rebuilding the wall well. Even though the elephants aren't coming now that there's so much human presence and concrete over here. But just to have a chance to feel into the richness of life along a river, and especially in India. And I saw on the cover of someone's spiral notebook one of these eco quotations that may not even be accurate, but it must be close. It said, the coastal waters, so the waters that are on the edge between land and sea, coastal waters, are only 10% of the volume of water on our planet, but host 90% of the species. So it might not be exactly, it might be like 92% and 8% or whatever, but just to have the sense of the richness that does happen in nature when we're at a place that's between two. And in our psychological life, we know very well that when we start to get caught up in an either-or mind state, mind set, we know very well that when we relax a little bit and let it be black and white, but also a place that black and white touch each other, it might not be gray, but it might be the place that they meet, that some way through will appear, will happen. So we're caught up in this or that, either or, this person or that person, this place or that place, etc. This is right, that's wrong, and so on. And if we just let it be, maybe this is right and maybe this is wrong, but what if I just, this is not working. I can't actually live this way. What if I just hang out between right and wrong? And something does come through, something happens that does work, that is alive. So I'd like to just open out in our minds what it means, this in-between. So in-between spatially, in-between in space, like the coastal waters. And even in our bodies, when we were still in our mother's wombs and just a few cells big, there were the cells that were the front and the cells that were the back. And the interface, as I understand it, between those two layers of cells, that interface between front and back, is where our body came from. That's how our body happened, where it happened, where it grew. Suddenly there was a line appearing and rising up. And then eventually here we are. So the potency of the place between. In the case of the body, it's lovely to feel how, even as we tune into the fronts of our bodies now, the front, those cells that were in front, so they were spatially a front somehow, became what nourishes us. So it became the yolk sac, and then it became our digestive system, as well as the placenta. So what was nourishing inside and outside. And what were the cells behind? They just came to be called behind because there was a front, so there's a back. We could start with the back and then the front. What was behind those cells came to be the amniotic sac. So we're again talking about support, the life support system. There's what nourishes, and there's what a kind of spaciousness that held us. And these are real experiences that we can fall into in meditation. The example of the embryo could help give us a sense of how tuning in to what's in between is not a rejection of what's in front and behind. It's all needed. But we usually don't give attention to what's between. And so if we can let there be nourishment and let there be spacious support, and then hang out between, not get too focused on something else. All of us are not in our home right now, in this ashram. We've come to visit. So it's another experience of being between. We're not in a familiar place, spatially. And what does that give you? So what we're going to work towards is what kind of perspective is available when we're between. When I know I'm not in my home, I know I'm traveling, I know I'm visiting. What is the change in our mindset when I know I don't live here? It's also really easy to get a sense of what is that clean, fresh perspective that happens if we think about relationships. So if we think about roles and being between roles, instead of being in a role, so one role is ended, a relationship ended, or a job ended. Some kind of a role ends, and suddenly we remember what was important to us, maybe, or suddenly we appreciate what was so good about that that ended, or whatever. So being between relationships, being at the end or at the beginning of, what is more available to us? I want to just pause, and as we come to in between in time, in between past and future, for example, I want to read a fun poem by Wisława Szymborska, called Three Oddest Words. Oddest, most odd. So most strange words. She says, when I pronounce the word future, the first syllable already belongs to the past. When I pronounce the word silence, I destroy it. When I pronounce the word nothing, I make something no non-being can ever hold. It's short, so I might read it again because I see it. Some people are digesting. When I pronounce the word future, the first syllable already belongs to the past. When I pronounce the word silence, I destroy it. When I pronounce the word nothing, I make something no non-being can ever hold. We can kind of leave that poem in the background during the talk. It kind of covers a lot of what I want to express. If we not only think of time, but experience with time, that there's no problem with past and future, but could we more fully experience what's in between past and future? and not even call it now. So Zimborska is saying, as soon as I say future, there's not room for any concept, much less a word, between past and future. And so we're not just talking about giving equal airtime in our thinking about past, future, and now. We're not talking about necessarily making something out of what's between past and future. But still, we could experience. That is what we experience. And what happens when we let our experience be as it is? Without any problem with past and future, but leaving room for what's in between. I think it gives a really beautiful sense of that in the embryo. There are these two things, and in between is where it's happening, where there's actually room for something to happen, because something hasn't happened there, because it isn't a thing. So what kind of perspective do we have in our life experience in between? The rich betwixt and the clean between. When we're relaxed, when we feel somewhere at home, the fluidity of our experience feels good. When we are not relaxed, when we do not feel at home, we do not feel belonging, the fluidity of experience is terrifying. We're trying to get some sense of home by something in our experience. And it never works. So the importance of feeling relaxed and at home. It's not always as easy as clicking our heels together. Like in the story of Dorothy, and she says, there's no place like home, there's no place like home, home, and then she wakes up and she's home. For many of us, it's a story called The Wizard of Oz, and in the movie version, not in the book version, she just clicks her ruby slippers together 3 times, wishing she were home, and then she wakes up at home. Different in the book, I found out recently. But she still gets home. The slippers are silver, though. So it's important to address in those of us where there has been some kind of shock of some kind. And the system is on alert and can't stop. So it's first to let you know that that's quite normal nowadays. I don't know if it was also normal before, but the Buddha seems to talk about it as well. So it might not only be our technology or our crime rates or whatever. So at least not to feel alone. The Buddha talked about it as a dart in the heart that keeps us running to exhaustion. And he says, let's address the dart first, not trying to stop ourselves from running. If we just notice that the system is on alert, looking for something to protect us or confirm us, something, someone, We leave the in-between, and we're not at home. But we can't just force ourselves to really experience the in-between. There has to start to be some kind of love affair with the fluidity of our experience, and some other kind of ground that welcomes us to enjoy the fluidity, the unpredictability of life, the shockingness of what is. And I just feel like giving a few practical, simple tips from Jinshin Jutsu. I showed you the first day, I think, some gestures or postures. So if you weren't here, that let's, for example, the left hand on the right shoulder, the right hand on the right hip, that stuff. So with this one, just having the arm on the eyes, just the pressure on this part of the face apparently helps the nervous system to calm down. So that's just a simple good trick. Give it 20 minutes, you know, lying down so that there is pressure on your eyes and not just strain in your shoulder. So from that system, there's also having the hands on the belly like this, chest and belly, or upper belly, lower belly. It's a self-treatment for shock as well as other things. And it doesn't hurt you, so. It's not too uncomfortable also. You might need to put a cushion under this elbow, but you'll find out. Either way. And the main treatment is love. So tenderness for ourselves and tenderness whenever we can in our atmosphere. It sounds simple, and it's not always easy to find. But when you found it, be there as much as you can. It would be like the river that you go to for your water. So today, the poet Wendell Berry, who's apparently, I think he's still alive, he's an American guy. He was into books, and then he went back to his family land in the southeastern United States to be alive instead of to survive. And he has this poem that I have loved for years. It's called Observance. And we're next to the Ganga, so the god of the river, we could say the goddess here of the river, leans. Do you know what leans? I'm leaning on my arm, so I'll lean on my arm. The goddess of the river leans against the shore in the early morning, resting. I'll change it to she. It's not she in the original. She devotes herself to watching sunlight as one devotes oneself to sleep. The light becomes her consciousness, warming her. Her mind, so that we're talking about the goddess, contains the river as its banks contain it, in a single act, receiving it and letting go. The goddess of the river leans against the shore in the early morning, resting. She devotes herself to watching sunlight as one devotes oneself to sleep. Isn't that an amazing line? The light becomes her consciousness warming her. Her mind, the mind of the divine, the mind of the goddess, contains the river as its banks contain it, in a single act, receiving it and letting go. So devoting as in sleep, we think of devotion as like Jai Krishna or whatever, like being excited and loud and not quite complete, but as in sleep, there's not much left to do any shouting. Also, for the poem to give us a sense of how, even if in our experience, even if our experience is groundless, we can never really have ground. And as soon as we try to defend or get or attack for territory, for ground, we suffer and we, of course, cause suffering. And as soon as we relax into belonging, into aliveness, as another kind of ground, there's joy. There's a completeness. And there's a love of the fluidity of our experience. So the Buddha and the teachings of the Buddha talk about impermanence as something that is necessarily part of experience. So I'm talking about that, but from a completely different language and place, where we love the fluidity. In the place of loving the fluidity, I'm talking about the perspective that comes when we're in the in-between. We can love the fluidity. We feel the richness of it. The richness of not making nothing a thing, the richness of not making anything into a thing, the richness of receiving and letting go in one act, the poverty of having a thing or making a thing, the desperation, the dart. So there's loving the fluidity, the richness of what is, including our experience of what is, our perceptions, our everyday experience, and including that possibility of resting into groundlessness, being at home there. Part of what is rich is that sense of completeness. So we could call it being filled by the real or true perfection. We could call it being empowered by the real instead of being disempowered by the ideal. So if we're just leaning into what's not past and what's not future. I keep putting past here and future here. Like Merlin. We lean into the in-between. And we let our being devote itself to being there, not only with the water flowing, but with the sunlight. It's interesting that it's a river that's contained, that's received and let go, but the goddess, the god, is drawn into the sunlight, and the sunlight becomes the consciousness, warms the consciousness. So if we're leaning into the rich betwixt and the clean between, we have the kind of easy to feel example of how we feel when we're between projects or problems. So even in one single meditation, when we come up with a problem to deal with, we want to work on something that's wrong. Outside or inside, it's the same movement of mind. And then maybe we find a way to be more creative. Okay, let's not treat it as a problem, because that's not really respecting the aliveness in the situation. So it's a project. This is a language play in Jinshin Jutsu. They say there's not a problem, there's a project. But even when there's a project, we're on. were working on a project. And we could then sort of lean more into the in-between and let the project not be my project. So it's just a process. It might be my process, but it's not my project. Life has got to deal with it, because I can't do anything about this repeating anger or repeating busy mind or repeating sadness or whatever. And then that devoting as if to sleep. We don't even remember, and we're not bothered or worried about whether my process is going on. Because it is. That wholeness of, it's not even quite giving ourselves to. Being given or being given to, probably both, receiving and letting go in a single act. So just the coolness that happens when we're not on a project and we don't feel like calling a problem a problem. And I just want to tell you something that's important in my life, in case it encourages you to be as crazy in your own way as I like to be. And it's just about the early morning. And it's not about setting an alarm clock, but it's about being up when it's dark. Whenever possible, being up when it's dark and no electric light. Sometimes because of the children or whatever, I don't turn the light on so I don't wake anyone up. And I love it. Now I have an excuse not to turn the light on. Not even a candle. But then, okay, the candle, the dark, being awake. Not as a problem, not as a project to try to get myself back to sleep with some relaxing guided meditation from the Open Dharma website or whatever, just. Letting the natural freshness of the time of day be absorbed. Letting the mindset synchronize with the mindset of earth, the mindset of night. In that freshness, we can recognize, we can receive and let go, but really value what we receive when it's telling us what my path is, what I may practice, what is my part of this thing called my path, what is that all that I can do. It might come, as for the Buddha, in a memory, remembering when. It might come in a dream, when you thought you should be awake in the meditation, and you hear yourself snoring or whatever. It might come when you find yourself continually lying down and someone told you to sit up and you're lying down. Or you thought you're supposed to be in the hall, but you keep being drawn outside. We'll usually think that it's wrong for a while before we recognize and value these little glimpses. They have such a freshness and lightness. It's so not the seriousness of a meditation instruction that's been published. So I didn't say much about the real and the real perfection, being filled by the real perfection. For me, it's said best in a line from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, translated by Stephen Mitchell, which I say 12 times a year probably. True perfection seems imperfect, yet is perfectly itself. When we're in between, not making something out of everything we can, not even pronouncing the word nothing, we can feel shaky and vulnerable. And if we let ourselves feel vulnerable without freaking out, then a tenderness takes place. It almost takes our place. Tenderness is us. And when we let it be tender, but not in shock, tender but not helpless or needy, but yes, tenderness, which includes vulnerability, we know that it's powerful. We know that power comes through. Maybe we can kind of come at it from two sides, since we're talking about being between two sides. Loving the fluidity and being refreshed by the coolness of between projects, the coolness of not being so on, the completeness, the fullness, the being filled of letting things be themselves, the true perfection that is perfectly itself and seems imperfect. I hope this can help us get the feeling of being between without making the between a something. Letting the between be a place where, if anything, something comes through, a power comes through that doesn't have a personal agenda. I'm in love with some of the words of one Zen master called Dogen. So just to have the feeling of all who've gone before and been through the same thing, different language. And in one of his talks, he told the people listening, he spoke to his monks as well as to lay people, including women, which was completely radical at his time. He said, the practice of the Buddhas, first of all, the practice of the Buddhas. So he already starts off radical. We usually think of our practice as a way to get to be Buddha so we can stop practicing. We can get rid of that backpack called practice and be light. And so he's already pointing out a common misunderstanding of what practice is. It's not the heavy backpack that we're carrying. Put that one down and wait for a lightness to take you. And that would be your path. And that lightness allows us to walk through walls of fire. I'm not saying that it's just that easy, but it has a kind of fun in it. So the practice of Buddhas and Tathagatas, so he's just emphasizing those who are already finished, completely finished, gone beyond, their practice. And he's then inviting us to share the practice of the Buddhas. He's not just saying, oh, this is for them, and you'll get there someday. He's saying, the practice of the Buddhas can be our practice. Because he says, the practice of the Buddhas is like this. You make parental heart, so the heart of mothers and fathers. You make the heart of mothers and fathers your heart. And the heart of children your heart. To encourage us, he says, if we do this, we will be like a boat with a rudder on a river in flood. Like, no matter what the current is doing, we're a boat, but we have a way of steering. And we're like rain in a time of drought. Rain in a time of drought. It's been no rain and no rain and no rain, we can't believe. And then it rains. The heart of children, your heart. The heart of mothers and fathers, your heart. I can say a little bit more experientially about the heart of mothers and fathers than I used to be able to. And I'd like to share that a little bit with those of you who also have that experience and with those who don't. Parental heart, heart of mothers and fathers, first of all, is this chance to have 100% love, to be 100% love, to allow 100% love. It's the first time that you don't need any excuse to hold back the love. The child is screaming, the child is not perfect. The child is himself or herself. The child is misbehaving, the child is whatever. And it doesn't remove any half percentage. There's no need to hold back because of that. There's actually a calling forth of more love. From the 100% love, finding a way to be a ground for the child. Because the child wants to play now, but you know if the child doesn't eat now, the child will freak out in 10 minutes time. And you need to find a way that the child wants to eat the food. So this kind of game. This is a kind of game that we can include in our way for us and for others. And letting the gap between parental mind and child mind also call the mother-father heart into that timeless presence, timeless mind. All of that is parental heart. That's not child heart. Being willing to give every single thing and every single bit, including one's own life, in a second. So it's being willing to be friendly with death, basically. Being willing to be on that side where we're going away and you're coming in, and I make room for you. And at the same time, I make ground for you. I make space and nourishment and space for you to happen. And the timeless presence radiates to me. So that's part of the being filled, being empowered by true perfection. That is just simply truly itself, perfectly itself. The child heart, we were all children. And sometimes on retreat, we remember, not just up here, but we actually remember not being in a hurry, not needing to get somewhere, looking at an ant. Wanting to be tickled. So let's, there's more, but let's leave that like that. So we've talked about a perspective that kind of falls into place or comes upon us or happens when we know we're between. And we can feel safe. We love the fluidity. We can appreciate the lightness, the freshness. We're not so feverishly involved that we don't even notice the light touch of the suggestion that's true, that's helpful now. And we're filled and empowered by how things are whole and giving. And now, lastly, I just want to basically read a couple of more pieces from Wendell Berry to talk about what comes through when we're at home in between. Maybe just briefly to mention, because I made it sound like a prerequisite, so as if we have to first deal with the shock and only then we could move on. But sometimes there's shock and we could be in a wide space that can also include that experience of being in shock, being on. There, of course, is a spaciousness that can allow that and be steady with any experience, including panic, overwhelming shock, etc. Is that what? Thank you. Like this? Smells like tulsi. So when we let there be space, spaciousness, enough for life to be itself in whatever form, in whatever way, in our experience, what comes through? I mentioned power with tenderness. So Wendell Berry talks about someone who lives in harmony with the place where he lives over a long period of time. And so that would be us in our groundless ground. After some time and sometimes, we know we're in harmony with what is, with our place. So this farmer trusts the changes of the sun and air, dung and carrion. Dung is shit, usually like animal shit. Carrion is dead meat, some dead animal that's left lying somewhere. So he trusts the changes of the sun and air, dung and carrion made earth. Richness that forgets what it was. So this is partly giving some encouragement for that mother, father heart. Richness that forgets what it was. So a richness comes through, and there's a forgetting of being a giver or being rich or what was the shape before. There's no hesitation in that. And there's no hurry. The second poem is part of a poem by someone named Carol Ann Duffy. It's not Wendell Berry. And it talks about when we let, and our circumstances let, our path be filling, be happening, without me doing it. It's the poem is called Prayer. Some days, although we cannot pray, so sometimes it's especially on the days that we think, ah, I can't meditate. Some days, although we cannot pray, a prayer utters itself. So a woman will lift her head from the sieve of her hands. A sieve is when we're straining something. So I picture it like a round sieve that we could be sifting flour or straining tea or whatever. A prayer utters itself. So a woman will lift her head from the sieve of her hands and stare at the minims sung by a tree, a sudden gift. I don't know, maybe someone knows. I think minims must be one of the Latin prayers that is sung in a monastery or something. Some nights, although we are faithless, the truth enters our hearts, that small familiar pain. Then a man will stand stock still, hearing his youth in the distant Latin chanting of a train. So it's often just when we think we're at our worst that something can happen. So now we have, this is the richness of Wendell Berry. I knew I had two Wendell Berries for this last part. For the parents and the children, for death and life. We just start to get a sense of something that carries through, doesn't mind about birth and death. So doesn't mind dung and carrion made earth, a richness that forgets what it was. And lets us be in a place where one can be safely without thought. So I'm just going to pause in the poem here, this last piece from Wendell Berry. A place where one can be safely without thought. Our normal mode is to turn thought on to be safe. But our actual experience is, without thought, we can be safely. So this is of real help when we have our hands like this, or this, or this, to take thought more lightly. Not let it take over and trigger the whole system alert into the bloodstream. And when it does, there's always more room. So Wendell Berry says, a place where we can be safely without thought. See the day begin and lean back. A simple wakefulness filling perfectly the spaces among the leaves. I think this poem gives us a sense of the importance of leaving those spaces and letting us ourselves be absorbed into when that happens, as well as the possibility of a simple wakefulness filling the space between the words, the thoughts, anything, so that we don't only have a practice that's about trying to keep quiet and stay there, but feeling the quietness, allowing a simple wakefulness that does, it by itself fills without losing the space. It fills the spaces between the leaves. Is there any question or comment, something you would like to say?
Giving in to things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of I forget exactly the term in Buddhism, but when we give up, when we let go, mm-hmm. when we let go.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing when something like that happens. I'm in my older years, I forget things. I forget where's my keys.
Yeah.
And I forget, you know, different things. And I have learned now the way to find my keys is just to forget about it. And suddenly they appear right there on the table.
Good.
And I mean, and even it goes on to other things.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Great.
So, yeah.
Could you hear him? No? He said it sounds like giving in to things. And he gave the example of noticing that he more often forgets, for example, where he put his keys. But he's discovered a way to find them is to forget about trying to find them, forget about the keys whatsoever. And there they are on the table in front of him. And it's not only the literal keys, but many kinds of keys that are found in this way. Safely without thought. Okay, thank you. So let's have a couple of minutes silence together, as you are, as it is. Thank you for being here. It's a privilege for me and for us to be here with you.